And welcome back to the First Cut Podcast with Kyle Porter. That's Kyle Porter. I'm Chip Patterson. And Kyle, who was more frustrated that the final round at Pebble Beach, the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am, did not end? Was it Phil Mickelson or was it Kyle Porter? Because our Monday finish, you know, I think that if you got a chance to maybe take in some golf at 11 a.m. Eastern time, 8 o'clock local out there near Carmel, you know, the Monday finish can be something that is unique and celebrated, a nice way to break up an otherwise mundane start to the week. But for Kyle, sitting on edge through the hailstorm, trying to put this thing to bed from the coverage standpoint, what was your ruling on what they should have done at the end of Sunday?
Well, they definitely should have stopped. But yeah, I was thinking about this, Chip. The two most dramatic moments that we've had in golf in 2019 have been one, a ball at rest,
number 11,
backwards into the water.
Yes.
And two millionaires discussing the phases of the moon. I mean, that's legitimately, like, I'm being serious about that. They were incredibly dramatic and hilarious.
Yes.
But I don't know what it says about golf that those are your two biggest points of drama so far for 2019.
I mean, if I could do a putt and play two holes in 6 minutes, I would, but we just can't. And like, okay, so if you're just listening to this, Phil Mickelson has won the AT&T Pebble Beach just like maybe like an hour ago. We're sitting here recording on around early lunchtime on Monday, and Phil Mickelson, you know, comes off and in the post round comments to Peter Costas, you know, he's I thought that he did a good job of coming out, recognizing that him being very frustrated had become the story, and he comes out, addresses it, says we absolutely should have stopped, and I thanked Paul this morning. I just tend to get inside my own little bubble.
No, not Phil. I thought it was very on brand that he thanked the guy that he just beat.
Yes.
For stopping play. He was pissed.
No, I think that because he said he told him that in the morning at the range. I think that was psychological warfare. If there was any chance that Paul Casey was going to get back and like chase Phil down, it wasn't going to happen after Phil was like, hey, man, thanks for stopping.
It was really funny. And I don't know what I think Phil, even at 48, is a little bit unaware of his own limitations, like as a, like not as a golfer, but like as a human being that only has, like, I think he thinks he has like 28 hour days instead of 24 or something. I don't know what he thought was going to happen on Sunday, but I mean, it showed it right after. And the whole thing was great because like Casey and Phil wouldn't look at each other, and Casey like went back over to his side of the green, and Phil was like walking to 17. It was kind of awesome. Like I kind of loved the whole thing. But like 5 minutes after that exchange, the CBS cameras were showing Scott Piercy and Brian Gay trying to finish up, and it was like, I mean, you couldn't even, the only light on the course was the leaderboard on 18. Like you couldn't see anything. I don't know what Phil thought he was going to do.
I'll tell you exactly what Phil thought. Phil thought, I'm loose and I'm playing well. I don't have any bogeys on the card. Because he was at his most pleading moment. He was asking to play 17 real quick and get the tee shot off at 18, right?
Yeah. Like that was the play for him. But it's not really like if you're going to stop, I would think you want to stop there so that you open with the tee shot on 17 and not with the drive on 18, right?
I mean, he obviously had practiced the tee shot on 17 all morning because he stuck it. Missed the putt that would have made birdie, but still, like, when that tee shot came off, I was like, oh, okay, this is a wrap.
Well, let's talk about that because it's getting a little bit lost because of how hilarious the ending was on Sunday, but some of the shots he hit on, well, really throughout the final round, I mean, he shot a 65. It was the low round of the day with Kevin Streelman, and no bogeys. He finished I think first or second in proximity to the hole, first or second in strokes gained on approach shots. And it wasn't just that he was hitting it close, he was hitting these like knockdown 8 irons and like little like half swing 7 irons. And it just looked like he was controlling his ball like I have not seen him do in a long time. And it was kind of awesome to watch. And I don't know that we're going to remember it in a month or even 4 or 5 months when the U.S. Open is played. But the way he controlled his ball was kind of jaw-dropping. I mean, to watch him do that at that age, I was blown away by some of the iron shots he was hitting on Sunday.
When we consider all of the storylines and all of the pressure that is going to be on Phil for the U.S. Open at Pebble, both from the finish in the slam, having it there, a course where he has so much history, I think that in some ways it's perfect that he won this one. Like to me, because of what we saw or what we have seen in the last couple years when Phil just seems to get in his own way, it's like this was the performance that maybe could have won Phil a U.S. Open, but it's not going to happen at the U.S. Open. It's going to happen here at the AT&T Pro-Am.
It was almost the only way he hasn't lost a U.S. Open yet.
Right, yes.
Like he's lost like the U.S. Open in every imaginable way possible, except for winning on the course where the U.S. Open is and then not winning the U.S. Open on that course in June.
Yeah. So we'll be able to get bingo after June.
I mean, here's the problem, Chip, and this is what I'm going to come back to in June. I don't know if everybody else will, but Saturday, 7 of 14 fairways, tied 130th in the field. Sunday, 7 of 14 fairways, tied 46th in the field after the cut on Saturday night. Those were both his rounds on Pebble Beach. And, you know, for all the attention that Thursday got where he hit every fairway, that's not going to win you a U.S. Open.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, he said that after his round. He's like, this is a completely different course in June, and he gets that. But like,
I was kind of hoping he was about to drag the USGA and just start that fight again. Just use that time and that he would be like, it's going to be a totally different course for that championship. I mean, once the USGA gets their hands on it, who knows what's going to happen.
But like he said this after, I think he said this after at Safeway after the Ryder Cup in, I guess Safeway would have been in October last fall. Like he basically said, I'm not going to play courses anymore that have a lot of rough. And at the time I was like, okay, you know, whatever, we'll see you at Torrey. But then he skips Torrey and you're like, okay, well maybe this is like a real thing. The problem is the one he has to play is the U.S. Open. And I don't know, for as long as he's been off the tee, by the way, have you seen his driving stats?
I don't have them pulled up right now, but I know he was driving the ball. Like he's hitting it, what, 305?
Okay, so, well, sort of. So here's the driving distance on the PGA Tour. This is through Phoenix. So it doesn't include Pebble because Pebble wasn't completed until like 20 minutes ago or whatever. So Cam Champ is leading. No surprise there. He's averaging 321. Tony Finau's second, 318. Grayson Murray's third, 318. Luke List, 317. Phil Mickelson, fifth on the PGA Tour in driving distance, averaging 316 off the tee.
Goodness gracious.
Patrick Cantlay, Ben On, somebody named Seth Reeves, and then Wyndham Clark, Brandon Hagee, Hideki round out the top 11. Adam Scott's farther down, Justin Rose. Jason Day's 21st, Bubba's 24th, Rory is 26th. I mean, it's kind of remarkable, right?
Yeah, but I mean, wouldn't the other side of that be through eight events, strokes gained off the tee, he's at 59th.
I mean, that's the story of Phil, right?
Yeah.
And I think his understanding of it is that, okay, well, if I'm not going to be accurate, and after 29 years of playing, I guess I'm not going to be accurate.
Yeah.
Then I might as well be long. And I don't know. It's the whole thing's kind of weird because you see these stories. Oh, he's his workout's better, he's eating better, but he said he picked up like 5 or 6 miles an hour on his swing. That seems crazy at the age of 48, but clearly, I mean, the results show it. I don't know if, you know, I think he's played probably some easier driving courses to where he can just unload all the time. So maybe that changes over the course of the next 5 or 6 months, but That's the thing that's kind of stood out to me about his game so far this year.
Okay, so I would guess that that would be a combination of like technology. Like I could see Phil almost getting his Bryson on when he just decides he's like, all we're going to do is we're going to have the perfect plan, workout regimen, meals. Like we are going to get it to where I am just mashing this ball off the tee. I think I could totally see him committing himself to that, especially given the premise that you laid out there that he might just be like, yeah, you know what? I'm not going to hit many fairways.
But it makes sense because, you know, you look at places like...
He's still third place in birdie average.
You look at places like Augusta and you don't have to be straight there.
Mm-mm.
I mean, you can be, I mean, as he knows, you know, you can be crooked and still play really well there. I mean, I guess... If that's true, then I guess the question is, why did it take so long to focus on this? But it sounds like it's more of a thing where it's, you know, off the course stuff, like eating and working out than on the course stuff. So I guess you do have to sort of make a long-term commitment to that to see the results. But still, 6 miles an hour, that's a ton. I don't know if those things add up. I don't know.
Well, I mean, he could be lying. Like, I mean, Phil Mickelson talking about his own swing speed is not a trustworthy narrator. Right?
Yeah, there's a swing speed stat. I might have to go deeper than just clicking around.
Okay,
on
all right. So
PGA.
How often have you measured your own swing speed?
Like once a year when I go to the PGA show.
Do you know it, have enough of a baseline to imagine what like 5 miles per hour feels like or looks like?
No. No, I don't.
I don't either. Oh, Phil's like, oh, I've got 5 miles an hour on my swing. I'm like, okay, cool.
I've got, hold on, I'm pulling up clubhead speed. I don't know.
I recognize that it's something that obviously a lot of golfers, not only professionally, but golf people who enjoy playing golf, non-professionally, amateurs. I understand that it's definitely something that people get into. They love measuring it. They love using it as a way to track, you know, how they're getting that club face around. But
okay, so Cam Champ is 130. He leads the PGA Tour. Next closest is 124.5, which is crazy. Mickelson's at 121 clubhead speed, and last year he was at 116.
Wow.
Wow. How about that?
He's not lying.
it's statistically true that he's gained 5 miles an hour on his swing, which, you're not supposed to do this at age 48. It doesn't add up to me. It doesn't make sense. But I think the funny part is, you know, with him and Tiger, we've always said, you know, what if they just took a you know, a little bit off and found more fairways? And Phil's like, actually, I'm going to go the other way.
Hey, I would say
find fewer fairways and just hit it as far as I can.
I like it. Hey, I say it's on brand.
Do. I like it too. I think it's great.
Phil Mickelson, 43 PGA Tour victories after the win at Pebble. Ooh, maybe 44 after the win at Pebble. PGA Tour wins Phil Mickelson at the end of his career over under 51.
Under for sure.
48.
Under.
Wow. So you believe that we might have witnessed one of like the last three or four wins of Phil's career?
I think so.
Wow.
I mean, here's the thing. Here's what's crazy when you contextualize this stuff. And this is what I always did with Tiger's majors. It was like, oh yeah, Tiger will get to, he'll get to 19. And you're like, really? Is Tiger going to have Phil's entire major career in his, like in his 40s? Is that going to happen? Does that seem likely? And then with Phil, it's like, okay, so is he going to have Ricky Fowler's entire career in his 50s in terms of just PGA Tour wins? I don't know. Like, it's easy to do it right after he wins. We did it after Mexico. It's like, oh, he'll get to 50, you know, whatever. But it's just so hard to win. And you know, I think the 65 in the final round at Pebble is getting a little buried because it happened over the course of 2 days. That was crazy. That's a crazy final round to shoot. And
which is why he wanted to keep playing. He knew he was blackout.
So I don't know. I would go under 48.
All right. Other takeaways from the weekend coming up right after this.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Okay, so Paul Casey, you know, obviously did a good job pushing here, but then, like, let's see, where do you want to go for other takeaways? Because I think Jordan Spieth is certainly worth reviewing his time there. Where do you want to go?
Yeah, you know, Casey, I don't know. He feels like English Ricky Fowler to me, or Ricky Fowler's American Paul Casey. I don't know. Is that unfair?
Well, I mean, my biggest takeaway was that it was great to watch Paul Casey show a little bit of teeth, you know, not just get walked over by Phil.
But when did he show it?
By sticking to his guns and saying, "Nah, we're not playing."
By stopping play, the only time that he showed up on Sunday was by stopping.
So when you're playing out on the recess, like, it is a running clock, because when the bell rings, the game is over. And if you're up, it is a cheap move or a move of gamesmanship to kick the soccer ball all the way into the woods, right? And I think as Paul Casey is, like, asking for all these rulings, he's literally burning daylight and making it more in his advantage.
It's by the way, Phil would do the same thing. Phil definitely kicked the soccer ball into the woods.
Yes, to win.
No, I sort of, I felt a little bad for Casey because he didn't play that poorly. He shot a 71, which was, it was right around course average. I think course average on Sunday was like right at 71. But he got run over by Phil. I mean, there's not, and this is the thing that I always go back to. This is why winning is so hard. Course average was 71.1 on Sunday. That's why winning is so hard. It's the only sport, and I said this on Morning Drive last week, and we talked about it for a little bit. It's the only sport where, like, you can't play defense. Like, you can't defend. You have no control over what somebody else does.
Right.
Baseball, you can play defense. Football, basketball, even tennis, you play defense. You know, you control what the other person's doing, and in golf, you just can't. And so, I don't know. I mean, Peter Costas said it on the broadcast. He'd like to see a little more aggression out of Casey, and that's been the complaint about Fowler over the years, right? Not to drag Ricky into this, but I don't know. It lacked some oomph on Sunday when you kind of wanted to see it.
What about for Spieth? goes 66 on Thursday, 68 on Friday, posts 74, 75 on the weekend. Pretty disappointing.
Big time disappointing.
Big time. Yeah.
He goes three bogeys through his first, 48 holes. And then he closes with two doubles and six bogeys over the next 24. I don't know if that adds up to 72, but I don't know. I mean, the thing about him over the course of his career, he's been so consistent. Like we always talked about with him, like the rhythm of a 72 hole event, right?
Right.
And like finding that rhythm and peaking at the very end. And it's like he's just lost that. And so you'll see these great stretches and you're like, oh yeah, Spieth, like he's still got it. And then he finishes Saturday, the toughest day, double birdie, par par, bogey, double. And you're like, what was that? You know? Like,
yeah, absolutely.
I feel like normal Spieth would just par that out, get to Sunday and shoot a good score to be in the mix.
I think that there is, I am willing to entertain the idea, and maybe this is just from, you know, we talk about Jordan Spieth as an engaging conversation, and I think back to his conversation with you that we aired on the podcast last week. I wonder if, as he's continuing to tinker and evolve and grow and figure out new ways of what winning looks like, both in terms of his game and mentally, like I think that he wants to change things, and that process is just continuing to have growing pains. And that's what we're watching.
Yeah, and I think the hardest thing in golf, at least for a sustained career, is to trust yourself that like you're not, like your results don't necessarily mean you're doing the wrong things.
Right.
Like that's so hard, because then you're like, oh, well, maybe I should do this differently, and all of a sudden you're 2 years later, you've changed like 48 things that are the very things that made you so good to begin with. And I think that, I mean, I don't think he's changing a bunch of stuff. I hope that he's not. And I hope that he just kind of stays the course, because I think eventually, you know, it'll all click again and he'll be fine. I feel like I keep saying that, but you know, it remains to be seen. It's going to be a really interesting year for him.
Who else got your attention for the grades?
Jason Day.
Looked
great.
Good showing.
He had a bank robber look going on Sunday, which was phenomenal. To kind of contrast his SWAT team vest that he sometimes wears. So that was great. He finished T4. Shot a really nice 68 on Sunday. I was looking back at his finishes. He hasn't finished outside the top 25 anywhere in the world since the playoffs last year, since the Dell Technologies. So he's had a nice little kind of quiet, really successful run. And I say quiet because he hasn't won, but he's been right there. And another, I think this is like his, I don't know, sixth top 15 at Pebble or something. So he's somebody that I think is a pretty intriguing kind of early season majors pick going into Augusta.
That's a fascinating call, because we have become so comfortable with Jason Day's place among the many golf stars that we discuss here on the podcast. And I feel like that expectation is that he'll win one time a year, shoot some good rounds, but he is not getting as much major championship pick or that much steam as he might be getting right now. Or maybe you're the first one on it. Who knows?
Yeah. There's so many guys like that though, right? I said this about Adam Scott a few weeks ago at Torrey. Whenever Adam Scott plays well and is like contending, you're like, oh yeah, Adam Scott's unbelievable at golf. Like I can't believe how good Adam Scott is. But you forget about him because he's not in the public, you know, in the spotlight all the time. And Day's less like that just because he plays more and, you know, he does more press conferences and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, I think that in a lot of ways, all of these guys fly under the radar more than you would think. And he's certainly, especially when they don't win for a while, and he's certainly in that group right now.
When did he win last year? Was it at Torrey?
He won Torrey, and then he won, what else did he win? He didn't win match play, did he? Harrison. Hold on, I'm looking it up. By the way, who had whenever Spieth won the Open in 17, I was thinking about this. If I would have told you Phil and Tiger would win a combined three times before Spieth won again, what kind of odds would you have given me on that?
Absurd payout. $10 wins 200.
Jason Day won Quail Hollow. He won Wells Fargo.
Okay, so the Jason Day to win a major odds. Plus 400. Yeah, he's right up there with like a below DJ, below Koepka.
Yeah, I don't like that number for him. Like if it was like plus 700, I'd be like, oh yeah, I'm on that.
Yeah, I'm thinking that he might be overlooked in the conversation, but clearly the odds makers know what the deal is.
Yeah.
For sure. What do we got coming up? Oh, one more. Dustin Johnson. Bad week. You called it on Golf Channel. He's never won in back-to-back weeks.
Yeah, it was not great. He did not play well.
And guess what? It looked like he just came back from an overseas trip.
Yeah. So he opened 66, and it was really fun for that first day. And there was a little bit of hesitation for me because all four of Phil, Spieth, Day, and DJ played Monterey, which was the easiest course. He shot 66 first day, and then he gets 73-73. And granted, Saturday was tough at Pebble, and Spyglass is the toughest course, which he also shot 73 at. But I don't know. He just didn't have it. I looked up his stats earlier. I think it was his putting that was just so he was 53rd in putting and 52nd in approach shots, first in driving. So he drove it great. I watched him a little bit. I think it was on Saturday, and he just hit some terrible approach shots. I mean, he was all over the yard. So, not a great week for him, but zero reason, obviously, to be concerned.
You can follow him on Twitter at KylePorterCBS. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. We will be back with a preview looking at Riviera coming up in a couple days. Kyle, thank you very much.
Thanks, Chip.